Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. Currently showing 39 degrees out at the airport. We're looking for increasing clouds today with a high near 50. Calm winds will turn to the southeast 5. Rain tonight, low of about 44 overnight. Northeast wind gusting as high as 25 tonight. New precipitation between 1/2 and 3/4 inches overnight. And rain tomorrow too, mainly before 4 p.m. Could be heavy at times. High near 50 tomorrow with northwest winds coming back and gusting as high as 40 tomorrow. Next on the Midday Report, Kodiak COVID cases top 200 active. We take a tour with Lex Trinan of an Alaskan ICU. And your PFD is coming. We'll find out approximately when.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Federal Reserve policymakers now think inflation will run hotter than previously expected this year. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the central bank still believes price hikes will moderate in 2022 as coronavirus pandemic pressures fade.
Members of the Federal Reserve's rate-setting committee wrapped up a two-day policy meeting with a new set of economic projections. On average, they now see inflation running about 4.2% by year's end, up from 3.4% they were predicting back in June. The central bank still sees much of that price pressure as temporary. Policymakers expect to see inflation settling back to around 2.2% next year. Economic growth this year is now expected to be somewhat slower, but still solid at 5.9%. While the Fed left interest rates unchanged, near zero, a growing number of policymakers now say a rate hike might be appropriate as early as next year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Senate Democrats and Republicans are in a showdown over a bill to avert another partial government shutdown and separately to raise the debt limit, which Republicans oppose. NPR's Kelsey Snell describes the stakes involved.
One of the things that Democrats have warned is that it could start impacting people's 401ks, people who are invested in, say, large retirement plans through, I guess, teachers are a good example of people who are invested in large retirement plans that are in the market. It also could change interest rates for mortgages and just even something as simple as getting a loan to buy a car. So there would be fairly quick and pretty drastic impacts on the economy.
NPR's Kelsey Snell. The Treasury Department projects it'll run out of cash reserves sometime next month. Secretary Janet Yellen warns that a debt default could permanently weaken the United States. French President Emmanuel Macron has authorized France's ambassador to return to Washington. This after speaking with President Biden to address the diplomatic crisis between the two allies over an Australian submarine contract. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports the two leaders issued a joint statement today.
The joint communique begins by saying both presidents agree that the situation would have benefited from open consultations among allies on matters of strategic interest to France and Europe. France says it was blindsided by a U.S.-UK.-Australian nuclear submarine deal that resulted in Australia canceling a major contract with France for conventional submarines. Macron and Biden also committed to opening a process of consultations and measures aimed at restoring confidence. Biden reaffirmed the strategic importance of French and European engagement in the Indo-Pacific region and said the U.S. recognizes the importance of a stronger and more capable European defense. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes up 338 points or nearly 1% at 34,258. It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 34 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. 10 cases are close contacts of previously reported cases, 11 cases are of unknown transmission, 2 are travel-related, and 11 cases are classified as community spread. 203 cases are currently classified as active locally. There are 2 active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. To date, 1,951 cases, 78 local hospitalizations, and 7 deaths are now officially associated with COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. Alaskans can expect to start seeing $1,100 PFD payments hit their bank accounts in mid-October, according to the State Department of Revenue. Legislative liaison for the department, Genevieve Watutzik, says after the governor approves the amount, it takes about 30 days for the state to start pushing the money out.
Yeah, so the Senate passed the bill on September 14th, and the governor signed it on September 15th. We do need about 30 days. We are hopeful for the week of October 11th. We don't have a definitive date at this time, but we're hopeful for that week.
That's for the first round of payments made to people who applied online to receive their PFDs via direct deposit. The second round is for all others, including those who applied using paper applications. Wachusik says that round of payments is expected in the last week of October. 85% of eligible Alaskans received their PFDs by direct deposit. Back and forth over the amount of this year's dividend put into question whether Alaskans would see a PFD at all this year and ultimately delayed the rollout. Payments usually go out the first week of October. This year, the PFD office is estimating 640,000 Alaskans will receive dividend payments. Alaska is now the U.S. state with the highest rate of daily COVID-19 infections, according to the New York Times. The state reported another 835 resident COVID-19 cases on Tuesday. Those case counts continue to stress Alaska's ICUs, where the state's sickest COVID-19 patients get care. Nurses say they're fighting exhaustion, compassion fatigue, and now stigma. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan visited the ICU at Alaska Native Medical Center virtually to hear what things are like.
A narrow, crowded hallway makes up Unit C of ANMC's ICU. There's sliding glass doors on the left side of the hallway, specially designed to keep coronavirus particles from escaping. Rolling carts equipped with iPads for telehealth visits are parked outside many of the rooms. On this weekday morning, workers in masks and scrubs dart in and out of rooms, but it's surprisingly quiet. Joran Kalt, one of the nurses on duty, says yesterday was different.
Yesterday morning, we started with a code blue, which means somebody's heart stopped.
She says doing CPR in the era of COVID-19 isn't the same as it would be in normal times.
The bare minimum number of people go into the room, and then we have people that are outside passing us supplies and communicating with us about, you know, different things that could be useful.
They tried CPR, but this time it didn't work. Another COVID-19 patient died. The last images the family had were beamed through the Wi-Fi network from the lens of an iPad. Nurses positioned the cart to peek through the pulled shades, covering the glass window of a negative pressure room.
It sucks the life out of your soul, you know, day by day, somebody's dying. We're really tired, but we keep making the choice to come back to work every day.
ICU nurse Kristen Larson expresses a common sentiment in this ICU. Nurses here at ANMC say they're working overtime to take care of patients while dealing with the emotional trauma of near-daily deaths. It's exhausting and frustrating, especially since most of the suffering is preventable through vaccination. Mike Stafford is the charge nurse. After ducking into a narrow corridor lined with lockers covered in slogans like, "I am important," Stafford says COVID patients just take more time and personnel to take care of. Normally, at this ICU, there's one nurse for each patient. Now that ratio has doubled.
I've never seen this volume with so many people in one unit requiring as much resources as they require.
Each time nurses need to enter a negative pressure room where a COVID patient is treated, they have to suit up in a fit-tested mask and other PPE, like firefighters preparing to run into a burning building. Respiratory therapy manager Holly Pulaski has a different metaphor.
It's almost like PTSD. Like that war syndrome PTSD. And I can say that because I was in the military, and when you're in a war zone and you're seeing all this stuff, it's hard.
And for hospital staff, there's another factor that's making things harder lately. Last week, dozens of hospital workers showed up at an assembly meeting to testify about the importance of vaccines and masking. Audience members who support Mayor Dave Bronson's hands-off strategy for dealing with COVID booed medical workers at the time. Jackie Cantrell directs nursing at ANMC.
We as nurses went from being the most respected career in the world, you know, in the nation, to being, oh, you're just, you know, you're just a naysayer. You're just making this political. You're just making this what you want it to be.
She says personally, she hasn't been verbally attacked, but she's felt judgment online or at the grocery store. At the assembly meeting, an assembly person questioned whether doctors were doing everything they could to help patients get better. Cantrell says hearing that sort of sentiment tests the resolve of hospital workers.
And that's really hard on our morale. You know, I didn't spend thousands of hours in nursing school so that someone could tell me I'm causing harm.
With the current COVID surge expected to get worse before it gets better, Cantrell can only hope that more people start masking and get vaccinated. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
Alaska state troopers have arrested a resident of Hope and charged him with fatally shooting a Wasilla man while moose hunting in a remote area near the Canadian border earlier this month. Troopers arrested 42-year-old Robert Geller Tuesday and charged him with manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide in the shooting death of 74-year-old Michael Easley. A trooper report said Geller was arrested at his home in the Kenai Peninsula community. He's now being held at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. The report says investigators determined that Geller shot Easley on September 11th while they were hunting in an area about 8 miles off the Taylor Highway near Chicken. Troopers say Geller didn't know what he was shooting at and had been told earlier by another member of the hunting party that he shouldn't be shooting because Easley was not at their camp. An Alaska Air National Guard helicopter crew medevaced Easley to Fort Wainwright, and he was then taken to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital where he was pronounced dead. A 53-year-old Missouri man was sentenced in federal court Friday after he pleaded guilty to tax evasion and admitted to engaging in a multi-million dollar scheme to defraud customers. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, one of those customers was a Bristol Bay village that paid him almost $250,000 but received nothing in return.
In 2015, the village of Igiagig paid Michael Dismer to build a tugboat. The village had received a federal economic development grant for the vessel and hired Lakeland Marine Builders, the company owned by Dismer, to construct it. The Igiagig Tribal Council would go on to pay a total of almost $250,000 for the boat. But Igiagig never received a vessel. According to a news release Friday from the Department of Justice, the village was one of 22 customers defrauded by Dismer. Last April, Dismer admitted to the fraud and pleaded guilty to tax evasion. The Justice Department says that to avoid taxes, Dismer stopped operating under business names that owed taxes and continued to make money through newly created businesses. In December 2015, the village of Igiagig paid Dismer $96,000. Dismer immediately used $70,000 of that money to purchase a construction facility. He then transferred the title of that property to another company, an effort to keep the real estate beyond the reach of the IRS and other creditors. In all, Dismer received more than $4 million from customers for the construction of vessels, but he never fully delivered on his promises, instead spending much of the money on personal expenses. He claimed that construction was on schedule and provided misleading documentation, like photographs, to his customers to convince them to make the next payments. Some of them received vessels the Justice Department called incomplete, inoperable, or unseaworthy. At least seven customers paid a total of more than $1.3 million, but saw no vessels at all. A federal judge sentenced Dismer Friday to 5 years in federal prison without parole for failing to pay more than $768,000 in state and federal taxes, which he now has to repay. The court also ordered him to pay more than $4 million in restitution to the fraud victims. As part of his plea agreement, Dismer had to sell the property he bought with Igiagig's money and liquidate all other assets. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
An outbreak of COVID-19 at Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau shows no sign of improvement. The first case was reported on August 22nd, and since then, 55 inmates have tested positive for the virus. It's not clear how many staff members have tested positive. The state's Department of Corrections doesn't keep track of that, or how many staff have been vaccinated. Kelly Good is the deputy commissioner for the Alaska Department of Corrections. As of Monday afternoon, she says the facility was housing 41 COVID-positive inmates. Correction officials say they're offering COVID-19 vaccines to all new inmates at Lemon Creek, and visitors aren't allowed during the outbreak. Just over 40% of the inmates at Lemon Creek Correctional Center are fully vaccinated. A Canadian mining company is exploring claims near the small town of Pelican on Chichagof Island. Millrock Resources CEO Greg Byshear says claims around historic mines haven't been producing precious metals since before World War II.
There was some work done, geological work in the 1980s, briefly, but it really has been dormant since the mining activity took place in the 20s and 30s.
About 5 years ago, the Vancouver-based company applied to the U.S. Forest Service for drilling permits to renew exploration on the claims that once made up the Apex and El Nido mines. But that never happened because Byshear said they weren't able to secure the financing. Since then, Millrock has formed a partnership with the operator of the Kensington mine north of Juneau. That's allowed it to take soil samples on claims less than 3 miles from Pelican, which has fewer than 100 year-round residents. A subsidiary of Core Mining invested about $200,000 for a small team of geologists based in Pelican. They crossed the inlet to take soil samples west of town. Byshear says those sample results are still pending, but he says geologists hope they will show that the gold-bearing quartz veins continue down the mountain.
And it will hopefully be encouraging enough for our partner to finance drilling to test the quartz veins at lower elevations to see if the gold continues.
The work is only one of his company's roughly half dozen exploration projects in Alaska. He says it's important to keep that in perspective.
Many hundreds, if not thousands, of exploration projects like this start, but the cold hard reality for us exploration geologists is that not many of the projects actually result in the discovery of a deposit, or especially a deposit that could be mined at a profit.
Some of the claims were staked by Millrock, but the bulk of them are on private land owned by Apex El Nido Gold Mines, an Alaska company whose primary shareholder is Anchorage attorney Joseph Henry, a former state commissioner of administration. Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson's commander declared a public health emergency on Friday due to high rates of COVID-19 infection in Anchorage. J-Bear officials are urging military members to avoid places that don't require masking, social distancing, or other COVID-19 mitigation measures, according to a written statement. If the situation gets worse, the statement says commanders will take additional measures to protect military personnel, and that could include restricting access to off-base establishments. The 673rd Air Base Wing and J-Bear commander, Air Force Colonel Kirsten Aguilar, said in a statement that the emergency declaration reflects, quote, the continued reality, unquote, of a sustained community transmission of COVID-19. Vaccinations against the virus are required for military members under an order from Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin last month, but different branches have different deadlines. For the Air Force, the deadline is November 2nd, and for the Army, it's December 15th. Meanwhile, Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson has said he will not implement a mask mandate in the city, and he has shown little support for vaccinations or most other restrictions.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Smart buoys track any fishing gear. More on blue ocean gear after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
New smart buoys can track and monitor all types of deployed fishing gear and report directly to a cell phone or website. The small 3-pound buoys are just 7 inches in diameter and are tough enough to handle the harshest ocean conditions. Courtney Opshog is CEO and founder of Blue Ocean Gear.
All the information is collected in a database, and then we have both a mobile app that you can access from your phone or a web interface that allows them to see a little bit more of the data and charts and things like that. Most of the buoys have satellite transmission, but some also have radio transmission.
Opshog and her California-based team were motivated primarily by the impacts of lost gear on the marine environment and costs to fishermen.
As we explored the space, it became very clear that lost fishing gear was one of the most devastating issues that had both environmental impacts as well as financial impacts on the industry. There's about 640,000 metric tons of gear lost every year, and that gear continues to fish. So we developed our smart buoys to be able to track gear on the water. We kind of thought, well, if you could track it, you're not as likely to lose it.
The buoys also track temperature, depth, and other data that can be later analyzed. They last a full season between charges and don't require any special training to use. In just a few short years, the smart gear is being used in fisheries on the East Coast, Canada, the Caribbean, and the South Pacific. In Alaska, the buoys were field tested in Bering Sea crab pots, on halibut long lines, and a first order has come from a southeast kelp farm. The Blue Ocean team is getting assists from the Alaska Ocean Cluster. Find links to Blue Ocean gear at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 52, date issued 10 a.m. on September 15th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, September 16th, to 6 p.m. Saturday, September 18th, in the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be as described in regulation. As previously announced, the following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Wednesday, September 15th, until 6 p.m. Saturday, September 18th. The Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Dead Man section of the Alitak District, the East Side Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Southeast Afognak, Raspberry Strait, Southwest Afognak, Northwest Afognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, Northeast Afognak, and Duck Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Mainland District, and the Anton Larsen, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Sturgeon, Halibut Bay, Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Iqaluk and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District. Until further notice, in that portions of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. And other closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record of phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 22nd day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 7:55. And it'll set again at 8:07. That will give us 12 hours and 12 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 26. That happened in 1992. Our record high was 63. That happened in 1945, 1965, and the year 2000. We have a high tide coming up here on the east side. That's happening at 3:38 this afternoon. Will be 8.9 feet. followed by a low tide at 9:45 this evening of 0.1 foot. Our next high tide will be at 3:58, about 4 a.m., and be 8.4 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 9:53 a.m. and be 0.7 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:06 this afternoon in Larsen Bay at 14.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:25 p.m. of minus 0.2 tenths of a foot. Your next high tide will be at 4:24 a.m. and be 13.9 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:32 tomorrow morning in Larsen Bay of 0.6 feet. Mariners, we do have gale warnings on both sides of the island for Marmot Island to Sitkanek. Gale warning tonight and Thursday. For tonight, northeast 35, seas to 7 feet. For tomorrow, north 35, becoming northwest 45 in the afternoon, seas to 16 feet tomorrow. Those good old northwest winds coming back. In the Shelikof, gale warning for Thursday. For today, variable 10 becoming northeast 20, seas building to 4 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, north wind to 40 knots, becoming northwest 30 in the afternoon, seas to 12 feet in the Shelikof tomorrow. -39 degrees, and we're looking for increasing clouds today, a high near 50. Maybe we'll get there. Rain tonight, low around 44. East winds tonight, gusting as high as 25. And for tomorrow, rain mainly before 5 p.m. Rain could be heavy at times tomorrow. High near 50. North wind to 30 with gusts as high as 40 tomorrow. In the effort of taking extra precautionary measures, the senior citizens of Kodiak facility will be closed for 2 weeks beginning September 20th, on Monday. Congregate meals and Island Cove programs will be closed. Curbside and home-delivered meals will continue. If a senior needs information on Social Security or Medicare, a phone call is required. Call the Senior Center at 486-6181. And because they are delivering more home-delivered meals as well as more curbside meals, the Senior Center is in serious need of paper bags. If you have any, they would love to take them off your hands. Just drop them off at the Senior Center, and they'd like it if you could drop it off between 12 and 1 p.m. on weekdays, Monday through Friday. Thanks for your help, and have a great fall day. Kodiak Public Broadcasting is having its annual meeting on next Friday, day after tomorrow, 6 p.m. It will be broadcast right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. Again, that's 6 p.m. Friday. The next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will immediately follow the annual meeting. That's happening via video conference. If you'd like to attend the regular board meeting, please contact Jared Griffin at Jared, J-A-R-E-D, at kmxt.org for link information. And the public is welcome to attend. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a regular council meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM, and the meeting will also be web-streamed. The web-streaming link and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. And if you have any questions, call the clerk at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.